improving the quality of life for patients with serious medical problems through palliative care. The field of palliative care medicine is growing. According to a recent study done by Virginia Commonwealth University, 3 times as many hospitals have palliative care programs now than did in the year 2000, more than 1,800 hospitals nationwide. Palliative care is similar to hospice care in that it aims to comfort and improve the quality of life for patients. But it is unlike hospice in that one does not need to be near the end of life to benefit. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn more about palliative care in Maine from 3 medical experts who specialize in it. We'll discuss the role of opioids and pain management, the possibility of extending life through palliative care, and what it means to live well with chronic disease. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Anyone with a serious illness, from heart failure to dementia, could potentially receive palliative care. Today, we're going to learn more about what palliative care is, what it means for patients and families, and how the field is changing. Joining me in the studio, Robin Hirsch-White. She is Director of Palliative Care Service for VNA Home Health Hospice in South Portland. Dr. Vanessa Little specializes in palliative care at Mount Desert Island Hospital. And Dr. Isabella Stumpf is Division Director of Palliative Medicine at Maine Medical Center and Medical Director for Palliative Care at Maine Health. As always, we want to hear from you. Is someone you know suffering from a serious illness and looking at options available? Do you have questions about what palliative care does for patients? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I'll start with you, Dr. Stumpf. And my first question is, am I pronouncing it correctly? Do you say palliative care or palliative care? What do you say?
It was perfect. It's palliative care.
Okay. Yes. And what is it? I mean, I think most people, when they hear it, they think this is a lot like hospice.
So that's a good question. So let's start perhaps with the definition. Palliative care is a medical specialty that focuses on delivering care for patients with a serious illness. And the focus is relief on suffering, dealing with the stresses that comes with a serious illness, and to improve quality of life for the patients and their families.
So give me an example of somebody who might be, there's probably no such thing as a typical patient, but somebody who might enter your care at Maine Medical Center.
Yeah, so you're right. There's probably not a typical patient. There's a variety of patients that benefit from palliative care. And perhaps one example would be a time of a diagnosis that we know will be progressive over time. It's good to meet with palliative care to learn about how the approach can benefit assure the best quality of life while living with this serious and progressive illness.
All right. Well, Robin, I know that with hospice, the idea is to improve the quality of life. And in doing so, often we end up extending life.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same thing with palliative care?
That's a great question. That what we're seeing, that the research is showing us, is that with earlier involvement in palliative care, there is research that's indicating better outcomes. We know overwhelmingly from patients that they're feeling more heard in their care.
So what might it mean? What would be different than perhaps it would have been 20 years ago if someone has a diagnosis of a chronic illness?
In regard to what would be different, getting palliative care involved?
How would their care be different if they had a palliative care specialist or team working with them?
Right, and I'm glad you said team, because the gold standard for palliative care is an interdisciplinary approach to care. Because remember, it's an extra layer of support. We're looking at the whole person. So how it would be different is you're looking at that whole person and you're helping them not only with the symptoms of a serious illness, the physical symptoms, but you're looking at their living, just as Dr. Stumpf outlined, you're looking at their living as well as possible with their illness, but you're helping with anticipatory guidance to guide them and help them to think about how they want to find a path forward with this illness. What's most important to them in their living? And that's unique to each and every one of us.
All right. I want to bring into the conversation Dr. Little. You started, I understand, the program at Mount Desert Hospital. Is palliative care something that up until recently has been something that people who go to big cities and big hospitals get and people in smaller hospitals in rural areas are not getting?
Yes, I think that it still is a problem across the country in terms of access to palliative care in rural settings. Fortunately, at MDI Hospital, we were generously offered support from donors. So we are able to do this pilot program that a year ago didn't exist. Patients that live in rural areas might access palliative care when they go to the academic center or big center for their aggressive treatments. But often when they get home, they wouldn't have access. So they wouldn't have as much of a community-based support. And that's what we're trying to build for the community.
Well, so tell me about this, a one-year-old pilot program. How many people are involved in this, and what's being done at your hospital that wasn't being done before?
We're trying to really be connected with the primary care providers. So we've started outpatient clinics that are based in patients' medical homes. We have an interdisciplinary team. There's me as the physician and a nurse and social work. The social workers are also embedded in the clinic, so the patients might have already known the social worker from before they were even diagnosed with a serious illness. They might have encountered them in the course of their primary care life. And we recently added a volunteer chaplain, which is great to also remind us to attend to the spiritual needs of people living with serious illness.
Okay. How many people have been able to be involved in your program? Do you know off the top of your head?
About 100.
About 100. Wow. And what kind of conditions do they have? What kind of, are we talking about people with dementia and Parkinson's, things like that?
That is there. About 20% of the people have a cancer diagnosis, but also dementia, lung disease, heart disease, renal impairment, strokes. And when you mentioned dementia, I feel like that's an especially important one because mm-hmm. some people might think, how much of a conversation can you be having, with certainly at the end stages of dementia, but it brings up the importance of palliative care serving the whole family. The caregiver burden for people with dementia is so severe, and our team is there to support and help connect the family to resources that are available that they otherwise would have not had the energy to find or know existed.
Okay, I'd love to hear from any of you some stories of how palliative care is affected. I know you can't use patients' names, but an example of somebody with a certain diagnosis who have received a certain kind of care and lived life differently because of it. Do you have any thoughts at the top of your head, Isabella?
Certainly. So I think it's part of learning from the patient, obviously, what matters most to them and what are their goals and values, and then how can we align and personalize the treatment plan to that? So that's kind of what we're working on together. And, there's several stories that come to mind in patients that we cared for. For example, helping somebody to go on a little outing again that was not thought to be possible before, but with the appropriate support and resources in place, this can happen. Or for somebody to perhaps dance again, although it might be thought of that with oxygen, that's not possible, but it can be done. Mm-hmm. So those are, some little examples how we can help patients to live their life more fully.
Okay. You look like you want to jump in, Robin.
Well, what I'm loving are the examples that she's giving you. Do you see how they're so far removed from what's going on medically for patients? They're about their living. They're, so stories that I might share would be about patients who we orchestrated a chemo break so that they could be well enough to attend a wedding or be well enough for the birthday of their 19-year-old. So really being able to look at each unique patient situation. So great stories.
I want to ask a little about pain management because I know that that's a big part of hospice. Is that also a big part of what you're doing, Vanessa, with your pilot program?
Yeah. And certainly the physician and the nurse are the medical experts around symptom management. And I often feel like my responsibility is to make sure people feel well enough to do the rest of the so important stuff, the dancing and the discussions about treatment options, and to really benefit from what the team has to offer.
I'm listening to this, and it's so interesting because it seems as though this is really a big emerging medical specialty, But how is this different than what doctors have done all along, good doctors have done all along, and nurses and nurse practitioners, when somebody has a serious diagnosis, trying to figure out a way for them to live their life as fully as possible?
Well, I think, you know, that has been done all along. That's right. But what was recognized, you know, several decades ago by our pioneers, that we have did not spend enough focus on that. And that's when it evolved into a medical specialty. I think right now, all physicians and clinicians are trained in principal palliative care treatments. That being said, when it comes to needing specialized care, that's when we learned several decades ago that there's an unmet need, and that's when it evolved into a real specialty.
Okay. Did you want to jump in, Robin?
I did. Just to kind of highlight the difference between primary palliative care and specialty palliative care. So when you're seeing someone like Vanessa or Dr. Stumpf, you're seeing a specialist in palliative care, but you're absolutely right that primary care in our country has always been providing basic primary palliative care. But in our country, our primary care system has been under quite a bit of stress. So I think our efforts, as Vanessa outlined as well, have been to partner with our primary care physicians and providers, as well as they're the folks that have the relationship with these patients. So if we help shore them up so that they can engage in these things we call goals of care conversations, help with basic advanced care planning, because Healthcare Decisions Day, I'll just give a plug, is coming up April 16th. So, you know, when you start there and you normalize this process, that's how you build depth in the bench, and that's how you build, you normalize this process for patients so that as things arise in their lives, it can be addressed.
Is this really almost like a change of way of looking at things, where maybe before, for many patients, they get a diagnosis and are told, now this is what's going to happen, this is going to be your... how you're going to be treated, instead saying, here's your diagnosis, how would you like to live for the next few lives, for the next few years, and here's how we used to treat people, here are your options for treating people? Is that...
Yeah, and I think in saying, you know, you have severe lung disease, and here's the recommended treatment, you're here, you're seeing your pulmonologist, and this is what you should do. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that that's an option, but they also have choices. Like every step along the way, you have choices. And I think some palliative care serves to remind people that they are still in control, that they are allowed to ask for explanation and to understand their illness and understand that each step is a choice. Mm-hmm. And what palliative care works to do is help people decide how much they want to go through for what gain. We're constantly weighing risks and benefits and helping people see that they're in control and they have a choice.
So for both of your hospitals, is being hooked up with a palliative care team automatic for certain diagnoses?
Not at my hospital. We are we do teaching for the providers, and we are still asking for referrals. Different hospitals do it differently.
Yes, we have pilot projects where we have linked our palliative care service to be consulted, such as in patients that have COPD, for example. We did that and look at other patient populations as well where there might be an increased need. Other than that, I mean, there are certainly specific patient populations that we, you know, tend to be consulted more frequently and have triggers for that.
Okay. So we talked about pain management, and I know that the use of opioids has been a really important part of pain management. How has the discussion going on today in the opioid epidemic affected how you all think about this with your chronic patients?
I think that for the, you know, everyone recognizes the issue. And as I mentioned earlier, I think pain management is one piece of what we do, and opioids are one tool in our toolbox. I mean, we may be addressing pain in many other ways that don't even involve prescriptions. So when opioids are necessary for pain or relief of dyspnea, shortness of breath, then we're just weighing the risks and benefits and always trying to minimize the risk.
Has the new law in Maine affected how you prescribe?
I think that there are organizations in Maine that have worked hard to make sure that the needs of people with serious illness and at end of life are attended to.
All right. I want to ask, how widespread is palliative care in Maine? We have Maine Medical Center here. We have Mount Desert Hospital. But what about all the other hospitals? Do we know?
We do, and I think it's a growing field, which is good, but there's still a significant unmet need, I think, when we look at our population, our aging population, and knowing how many people in the United States really live with serious illness. But there are wonderful efforts on the way to really see how can we bring palliative care to more rural communities. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, where does palliative care start in the community, really? I think we have made some progress with, you know, the pilot project that Dr. Little just described and some others.
All right. And Robin, I want to ask you, if I'm listening to this and I'm a patient or a loved one is a patient, can I ask for this? Can I go to my...
Yes.
my physician or my, you know, my home health aide and say, I want to be hooked up with a palliative care team.
You can. You can ask for that. And in fact, part of our effort, so we're, you know, VNA being a member affiliate of Eastern Maine Health Systems, our program is also community-based home visiting program, looking at trying to get at the areas that are unmet for palliative care in Maine and move it upstream from the hospital because it started in the hospital. So I tell you all this, my long-winded way of getting around to the fact that we're working with the community too, because we're really going to change the culture when patients start going in and saying, hey, I heard about this thing called palliative care and it sounds like patients do better with the support of palliative care. Why wouldn't you want me to have that? That's going to be compelling on many levels. It's going to help programs stand up, but it's also going to encourage physicians to become more practiced at having these conversations and understanding the resources that are out there. We're still a pretty death-denying culture, so we've still got some work to do.
I'm wondering, too, we've done so many Maine Calling programs where the theme is the shortage of fill-in-the-blank, the shortage of nurses in Maine, the shortage of primary care doctors, the shortage of certain kinds of specialties. Are there enough palliative care caregivers?
No.
But I think that's where the opportunity is to look at innovative strategies, you know, knowing that there is a shortage on palliative care specialty trained clinicians. There's also ways to say, how can we work with our larger medical community, with our communities, so that patients still can get the services? And looking at, you know, new technology and innovations such as telehealth to really see how we can bring palliative care to everyone in need.
All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation about palliative care, our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Faderly Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at FaderlyLawMaine.com.
On the next Fresh Air, antidepressants and other psychotropic drugs. We talk with psychologist and journalist Lauren Slater, whose new book, Blue Dreams, is in part about the science and history of mood-altering drugs. She'll also talk about the medicine she's taken as a patient with bipolar disorder and depression and the side effects she's experienced. Join us.
Tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Yes, there is an app for that. For those of you counting on public radio, the Maine Public app allows you to take Maine Public Radio and Classical along with you anywhere and anytime. Stream Maine Public Radio or Classical or just catch up on the news. The Maine Public app is available for both Apple and Android smartphones and tablets, and it also gives you access to many PBS and Maine Public Television programs. You can easily find the Maine Public app in both the Apple App Store and in the Google Play Store, and it's free.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Understanding Palliative Care. With me in the studio, Vanessa Little, who's a palliative care specialist at Mount Desert Island Hospital, Isabella Stump, Division Director of Palliative Medicine at Maine Medical Center, and Robin Hirsch-White, Director of Palliative Care for VNA Home Health Hospice. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Well, joining me on the line now, Dr. Allison Caldwell. She is a pediatric palliative care specialist at Maine Medical Center. Thank you for joining us, Allison.
Thank you so much for having me.
We tend to associate palliative care with older people. When do children need palliative care?
Children may need palliative care at any time throughout childhood, and really the patients that we're caring for may even be as young as sort of prenatally, ranging through the young adult age group, when we really work hard to kind of support them through that transitional phase over into kind of the adult medical world. And really we focus on providing care to pediatric patients and their families who are facing any number of serious chronic or complex illnesses from which they would really benefit from focus on ways to think about improving quality of life and reducing distress in what is, you know, and what can be inherently a quite challenging and oftentimes stressful experience.
What sorts of needs do children have that are unique to them? What treatments are more often used with younger patients?
Sure. So I would really highlight kind of three key differences between sort of the adult palliative care world and the pediatric palliative care world that I think really kind of sets our pediatric patients apart and makes them special. First of all is the one that I sort of pointed out, that we're really caring for patients across all ages and across all stages of development. As I mentioned, you know, our patients range in age from the very young infant all the way through young adulthood. And with that period of time comes a huge amount of growth and learning and development that we really need to attend to. Secondly, you know, though more and more children are living with serious or complex medical conditions, this is still sort of relatively rare throughout childhood, which, you know, is a very fortunate thing. And so the care that we're providing is really sort of inherently individualized and targeted to each unique patient and family, I think, in a very special way. And then I think the third thing that's, you know, I would really like to point out is that within pediatric palliative care, we've really sort of embedded this concept of concurrent care in which we're providing disease-directed therapies, cure-intended therapies simultaneously with care intended to focus on quality of life and really maximize comfort. And this has been really sort of embedded into the pediatric palliative care world to the extent that it's actually been thought about in sort of the legislative world, and is sort of there's a little known section even in the Affordable Care Act called Concurrent Care for Children that ensures that for our children who are receiving sort of public health insurance, that they can actually access, if needed, hospice care and disease-directed therapies simultaneously, because that is so important for our pediatric patients, really quite crucial.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That was Dr. Allison Caldwell. She's a pediatric palliative care specialist with Maine Medical Center. And I want to correct myself. I think I said Robin Hirsch White. It's Robin Hirsch Wright, who's director of palliative care for VNA Home Hospice. We're going to go to the other calls now. Margaret in Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you for the program. I think it's really important. But I know that on the top of the mind of most people getting care in this country is how much it's going to cost them and what kind of service is going to be denied. It's so fraught that way that I'm really curious to know how this is paid for and whether the program has problems getting people's coverage acknowledged.
It's a very good question. Do most insurance policies cover palliative care?
Sure. So, the answer is yes. So most insurance policies cover palliative care like they would cover other specialty services, let's say cardiology, pulmonology, yep, other consultants that are required in providing the highest quality and best care for patients living with a serious illness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But certain aspects of the team may not be covered. Like for our program at MDI Hospital, the physician part is usually billable, but there's non-billable components and some of the extra time that it takes in certain family meetings or the communication around other providers, that's not covered. And I think that, Margaret, you've brought up a really good point, because certainly the sustainability and the future of both my program and palliative care as a whole relies on and making cost sense. Mm-hmm. But what we do know about palliative care is that it's one place in healthcare where it that improved quality of care can actually cost less.
Exactly.
Not necessarily to one hospital or insurance carrier, but certainly for like the healthcare system in total. And that's why I think it's had the major growth over the last 10 years as we move towards a more value-based system.
And you have a situation where it costs less and the patients are reporting better outcomes, and that is pretty compelling. It's a win-win.
Margaret, thanks for your question. I'm going to go to an email from Stacy. Is Alzheimer's one of the diseases that can benefit?
Absolutely. And in fact, the earlier the better for those conversations, for those basic advanced care planning conversations, for those conversations about what qualities of life that the person has now currently that they couldn't imagine living without those qualities. So these conversations aren't just a one-time thing either. With someone with dementia, you want to start those conversations early and revisit as the illness progresses.
Give us an example of, in Alzheimer's, a kind of choice that someone might be able to make by discussing this at the onset of or at the diagnosis.
I think it's really looking, and I certainly invite either Vanessa or Isabella to jump in here too, but it's really looking at, as the illness progresses, what type of care would people want put in place if they're coming to the place where they are no longer able to, in advanced dementia, no longer able to swallow safely? In that setting, would they want to look at artificial means of nutrition? In the setting of an advancing dementia, what other types of care would they want if they had another illness that developed? So a cancer diagnosis in the setting of dementia. That's a good example of a situation where meeting with a palliative care team could really be helpful to the patient and family in finding a path forward.
And also I want to add addressing the fear that comes with that diagnosis and the uncertainty about the future and what's it going to look like and how long is this going to be and how long will I recognize my family. Yep. And some of that we might have answers to, but some of it we just sit with the person with that unknown and accompany them through the journey.
And the thing about advanced care planning in our culture is we don't want to do it. We think that it means losing control, and ultimately it means keeping in control, and that can't be more palpable than for someone who's living with dementia.
We have Megan on Facebook has posted, I work in a facility hired by the families to care for their loved ones. There are very few of the staff who treat me with any respect, especially not senior staff. They all think or treat me like I'm stupid because I'm not a CNA or nurse. But what I do is vital because there's not nearly enough staff for any one care. And many clients spent whole days alone in their rooms or left in hallways. Robin, you're nodding your head.
I am, because everyone has a contribution to make on the team. And the doctor that I'm very blessed to work with, Dr. Jim Van Kirk, is our medical director. He's the medical director of Eastern Maine Medical Center's program too. And he is very clear on this. Every member of the team has an important role. And when we reach a place where medicine can't improve things, it's human connection that helps to heal. And so I would say that person had a very important role, and we certainly have a shortage of healthcare workers. So they're not wrong about that either, that there's not enough care to go around sometimes.
We'll go to JR, who's calling from Portland. Hi, JR. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Great show today, and very timely for me, too. I've been recently discharged with a palliated diagnosis. I'm still learning about all that, and I'm trying to stay in an independent living place as long as I can. But two things I tried to, focus on to make this phone call. Change is very difficult for anybody, and I see some difficult changes in the communities that get affected by a new specialty medical group coming up. Some people just plain out resistant to change, and others, whether it's in the public-private hospital thing, they're resistant. And some of the off-site vendors and suppliers are resistant to some change. And maybe there needs to be a little bit more oversight of that.
Do you feel, JR, as though you're getting different messages from different people?
Yeah, I sure am. And two of them have been very difficult for me, as a matter of fact. some of the, you know, designations I'm supposed to do is make the phone calls when it's critical for me. And I don't get the phone calls back in any timely manner. And that is, it puts me a shortness of breath on oxygen, you know, and without the proper medications in kind of what I call deep doo-doo for a while. And we had a recent situation that finally a pharmacist and I, we worked from 11:15 in one morning till he went off work at 7 o'clock one night to get the situation squared away.
Well, JR, I really appreciate your call. Are you all, you know, hearing something that sounds familiar to you, Isabella?
Yeah, so I appreciate you sharing that, your personal story. I think it speaks to how challenging our healthcare system is to navigate and how many layers mm-hmm. there are. I think part of palliative care's role is, and that is by having social workers like Robin on the team, but also volunteers, nurses, and others to, how can we support patients to navigate through this? How can we bring the care to where the patient is at any given time and address those needs? It's not perfect yet by any means, but we are certainly making progress and hope that that situation will improve.
Well, and JR, I know you said you've only recently been discharged into a palliative care situation, so I wish you much better luck with that supervision. I'm going to move over to Amy, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Amy. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. I was calling. Actually, I am the mother of a pediatric cancer patient, and actually Dr. Allison was our doctor, and I wanted to say thank you to her. She was absolutely amazing for our family. We were at Barbara Bush Children's Hospital. My daughter was diagnosed with a brain tumor, somewhat out of the blue. And so when you're thrust into this world, you want as many people on your team to help take care of your child as possible, especially my daughter was only 3 at the time, so she couldn't always communicate whether or not she was in pain. So she was helping us to identify if she was in pain and kind of making such strategies as to deal with that. So we're forever grateful for Dr. Caldwell and all of the influence that she had, as she also cared for our family as well and made sure that we were coping the best way that we could as well.
Oh, Amy, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story.
Thank you, Amy. We all appreciate it.
We'll move to Elliot and Mary. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi there, this is Mary, and I really want to tell you that this topic is near and dear to my heart. I have a brother who had Down syndrome, who developed dementia or Alzheimer's disease in his 40s. And as you know, people with Down syndrome often have many co-occurring conditions that can create pain for them. And I think that we face this challenge with people with an intellectual disability who have a diagnosis such as dementia, because they're limited in their communication style and often not able to self-report. I feel like oftentimes they're very overlooked in this process, and they could really benefit from palliative care. I felt in retrospect it would have been a service that would have been most beneficial in our case. And I'm wondering whether you're thinking about this population as you look around your communities, and how can you have outreach to families who have a family member with this kind of a diagnosis. Oftentimes the family members are elderly themselves and taking care of an adult family member with a disability that now subsequently develops another disability or a condition such as dementia. So I'm hoping you can address this concept of how do we make this available to all people in our community, and how can we be inclusive of this special population as they face this added diagnosis.
Thank you, Mary.
I think that's a great point, and we absolutely have everybody really on our radar. I think we're still really in an early phase in Maine of really strong palliative care saturation. So we have a lot of work to do with education, with providers to help them think of palliative care in those situations.
All right. Mary, thank you for your call. We have a tweet. For those without access to specialists, logistically or financially, please know that many of us primary care providers provide office visits for palliative care specifically. Ask your doctor to schedule a visit. Our guests in the studio are nodding.
Great. Yes, that's fantastic.
Well, we are going to take, we've got a lot of calls coming in, but we do have to take a quick break. Before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. February is a short month, so it is already time for our month in review program, a look back at what made headlines in February. What mattered to you? Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Camden National Wealth Management, providing comprehensive financial advice, investment management, and trust services. CamdenNational.com.
Hello, I'm Tim Franks. At BBC NewsHour, we give you access to the world's largest network of correspondents to deliver unbiased news and analysis on events around the globe. From the biggest breaking stories of the day to the important issues and trends, we're there. That's NewsHour from the BBC.
Weekday mornings at 9 o'clock and weekend afternoons at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
On the next Speaking in Maine, America's changing role in the world.
Now, I know it may seem strange to call a billionaire businessman a populist, but that's what he is.
As the Cold War unfolded, American diplomacy became a kind of imperial administration.
We'll join Gerald Seib and Chaz Freeman at the recent 31st Annual Camden Conference. This year's theme is New World Disorder and America's Future. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, this afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the role of palliative care for patients and families. Joining me today, Dr. Isabella Stumpf, Medical Director for Palliative Care at Maine Health. Robin Hirsch Wright, Director of Palliative Care for VNA Home Health Hospice. And Vanessa Little, Dr. Vanessa Little, who is palliative care specialist at Mount Desert Island Hospital. Join our conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I think a couple times, Isabel, during the program, we've been talking about palliative care and hospice. And although they're related, they are different. What is the difference?
Yes, so the difference is that palliative care is provided during any time of an illness from the time of diagnosis to cure or through progression. With hospice care, this is a philosophy of care that is for end of life, usually defined by a life expectancy of 6 months or less by most hospice eligibility criteria.
All right. So although similar, palliative care can be anybody who is suffering something that's going to affect their quality of life for an extended period of time.
That's right.
All right. We're going to go to Carrie, who is a palliative care nurse in Augusta. Hi, Carrie. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm on speakerphone. Is that a problem?
Actually, you sound okay. So thumbs up.
Yeah. So I'm very fortunate to work with a wonderful palliative care team for Maine General, Dr. Doner and Jennifer Casares and another nurse. Our program is growing, I'm happy to say. It's catching on. To one of the questions earlier was, you know, how does this help people? And it keeps people out of the emergency room. That's huge. It's so huge. A time, you know, that the emergency room seems to be a chronic epidemic these days. And when I have someone who went to the emergency room 6 times last year, and in the last 6 months they haven't gone once because of the palliative care approach, it's such a huge benefit for everybody.
You're avoiding crisis-driven care.
Yeah, Carrie, thank you for your call. And especially this time of year, you don't want somebody with something else going on, an emergency room full of people with the flu, that's for sure. Carrie, thank you so much for your call. We'll move on to Jennifer, who I think might work with Carrie. Hi, Jennifer, go ahead.
Yes, I do work with Carrie. we do have a program here in Augusta, and basically our program extends from the hospital-based side of things, doing inpatient, outpatient, and home consultation, and spanning across a very vast region that we cover. So we've developed a very flexible, across the spectrum from inpatient, outpatient care. So.
Thank you.
Good for you.
Thanks for calling in and sharing that. We're going to go to Tim, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi. About 12 years ago, I was diagnosed. I was actually in a serious accident and was diagnosed with Cripps type 2, which is chronic regional pain syndrome, of which there is no cure for. I've been on opiates since then. And I just want to know, is do I need a referral from my doctor in order to participate in this type of a program at May Medical, or can I just go on my own and do this?
So I think it's always important to discuss it with your doctor and the physicians in care team that you have been working with to see, you know, what additional resources and help there might be and what would be appropriate. So that's the recommended path that we have right now, especially, you know, hearing kind of the complexity that you have been dealing with.
Would you recommend, Isabella, that Tim Sato's primary care physician? I was listening to this program and they were talking about palliative care, and I'm wondering if that might be right for me.
I think it's important to talk to your primary care doctor about it. I think it's probably a bigger conversation that we can cover right now, obviously.
Thank you. Good luck to you, Tim. We'll move to Gorham and Meg. Hi, Meg. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a retired hospice and palliative care nurse. I retired at the end of 2013. And so this is a topic near and dear to my heart. What I wanted to add, my observation when palliative care was involved with a family and a patient, it was mentioned before about advanced care directives, that hard conversations happen when the palliative care team is involved. And my experience is that these are just extremely gifted communicators and able to listen and help people sort things out. And so that's one thing. And another thing is that a lot of times a patient has seen specialists, maybe a couple of them, and so they have had people look at pieces of their body, but not the whole person. And a palliative care team can act like a quarterback, helping put all the pieces together. So I just wanted to make those two points.
Meg, and, thanks for your call. Robin's smiling like she might know you.
I think I do know you, Meg. So first of all, checks in the mail for the kind compliments about our communication, A. And B, I appreciate that point about palliative care can make that narrative coherent for a patient, that they've heard from their kidney doctor and they've heard from their lung doctor. But how does this all make sense for what it means for them and their prognosis? And that's where I think palliative care is very gifted at making that narrative coherent for patients and finding a way then to walk with patients in this process.
Yeah, and if I may add to the expert communication skills, so part of the palliative care training for physicians completing their residency, let's say in internal medicine or family medicine or surgery, they move on to a specialized fellowship training. And during that time, expert communication, symptom management, learning the coordination of care for complex illness is part of this training. And that specialty training also exists for nurses, nurse practitioners, social workers, and chaplains with specific certification. So that's part of what our training is and part of why we can navigate.
Is that training available here in Maine?
It is. We have two fellowship programs for physicians in the state of Maine. One is at Maine Medical Center. We have two fellows per year, and then we also have a fellowship program at Eastern Maine Medical Center.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, Meg, thanks so much for calling in. We'll go to Wells and Mary. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Oh, hi. Yes, thank you. So my mother was under, I guess she was under hospice, palliative care, and then she moved into hospice. And what I want to share is that close to her passing, we had an insurance issue, and when we spoke to somebody, they said that once she moved over to hospice, that the configuration of insurance, like we were spending $500 a month for her, they said that that was really no longer necessary, that once she moved into Medicare over to the hospice side, that all her medications and care would be taken care of. And I was, no one shared that with me up until that point. That was several months
It seems to me, Robin, that Mary's story sounds familiar to you.
Yes, it does, because I think, you know, we're so loath to talk about end of life. What we forget is the hospice benefit is a very rich benefit for folks who are in need of that, in that it covers at 100% not only those nursing visits, not only the oversight of the medical director, not only the medicines that are used to treat the distressing symptoms, but any medical equipment. And then you've got that other interdisciplinary team, including bereavement support, for over a year after the death of the person.
Mary, thanks for calling in. We have an email from Avinash. Palliative care is close to me work-wise. I'm a nephrologist in the Lewiston-Auburn area and do take care of people with chronic illnesses. I very much appreciate my palliative care colleagues, both in and out of the hospital, for what they bring to the table and the resources they bring to the patients. Patients report better quality of life after the palliative care intervention. The other area that the teams help with is about decision-making, specifically for end of life. As technology advances, we may feel there's always attrition going on health-wise if one suffers from chronic illnesses, no matter how they are feeling at the moment. My palliative care colleagues have been tremendously helpful in guiding patients through that transition in their life. At times, I feel though the family members benefit even more so. This may be on account of the fact that the patients may realize how precarious they are, yet not able to convey it to the family members, and involving palliative care team may help them bridge that gap. Thank you, Avinash, for walking in.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
We'll go up to Bar Harbor and Anne. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank you all for the great work you do. And I have two specific questions. One is, if you're working with a palliative care team, do they help you write a medical directive? And the other thing is, if you're working with a team and you have a do not resuscitate order, let's say you're brought to the hospital in some condition, whether they help facilitate honoring the DNR, because I know very often those are not honored and people are very distressed by that.
Well, I will talk to you as your neighbor in Bar Harbor. That certainly a palliative care team, we do a lot of help with medical directives and basically helping people understand how to communicate what their wishes are in the way that will be most well received by the people reading it sometime in the future. But you don't need to have a palliative care consult to have that done necessarily. You certainly can have that done with your primary doctor or social worker, primary provider. And a do not resuscitate order, we certainly help communicate that. We make sure that there's copies at the hospital and the clinic and in your car. But most importantly, I say to everyone I have these conversations with, please make sure that we have this documented, but make sure that you verbalize it to everyone that cares about you, because it's best for everyone to know what your wishes are so that they can be a part of supporting that decision when the time comes.
Anne, thank you for your call. I want to ask each of you, how long is the waiting list to get to see one of you?
No waiting list.
Really? Mm-hmm. A referral right away.
So we are primarily inpatient focused. We do have a smaller ambulatory practice, and certainly there is a little bit of waiting time. When I look at the global need, there's a significant waiting time.
Mm. And Robin, if someone is being referred through your agency mm-hmm. for another service, can someone request palliative care team to come talk with them?
Yes, and so we've got the team, and our average rate of frequency with what we would see someone would be within 7 days of the referral. And that's because you're coordinating with family members at a time that's going to be convenient for them to make that home visit.
So once you have the diagnosis, this can be pretty quick.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In the hospital, we see everybody at the same day, and we'll try to do the same in the outpatient setting within a week or two.
Well, Isabella, I know you wanted to talk about how important community is and community services and creating a palliative care system that works.
Yes, I think what we learned over the last several decades as well, most programs matured out of a hospital inpatient setting, the need for patients is really in the community where they spend the majority of the time. So even if one requires being hospitalized several times during the year, the majority of the time they're home in their community. And that's where we need to tie the services together. And newer palliative care programs really focus on that continuum to provide the support, as Robin is doing with her team. From home, and then therefore can hopefully avoid hospitalizations that might not be necessary and can be dealt with.
Sure, because fewer and fewer diseases actually require inpatient stays at the hospital, correct?
That's correct.
So you have all these patients out there who could use your services who may not have 3 nights at Maine Medical Center or 2 nights to meet up with your staff there.
Right.
And some of these very detailed, complex discussions are harder to have in the hospital during an acute illness, mm-hmm. whereas you can do it at home, in the comfortable setting of your living room, with your family. It can be much, much more comfortable conversation.
And once you have that conversation with your patients, Vanessa, are you continuing to meet with them throughout the course of mm-hmm. their illness?
We're learning how best to meet that need because we are trying to balance being another doctor's appointment, another set of people involved in an already complex case. So we're really doing it individual based. How often do you want us to call you? How often do you want to come in? And a lot of that will depend on how rapidly their disease is progressing. And I just wanted to make sure that we've been clear in this talk that accepting a referral to palliative care and meeting with a palliative care team does not mean you're giving up anything.
Right.
You're adding another layer of support. No one is going to talk you out of any aggressive treatments. In fact, we've helped people get onto hospice sooner, and we've helped people not go to, we've helped people pursue aggressive treatments like lung replacements and chemotherapy. I mean, it's all about an individual's goals and what that is, whether it's curative or comfort or somewhere in between, and weighing the risks and benefits of each thing for an individual. It's really about empowerment.
There's no such thing as going palliative. So we want to really be clear about that today.
Well, those are going to be our last words. Thank you all for being here today. The voice you just heard, Robin Hirsch-Wright, the Director of Palliative Care Service for VNA Home Health Hospice in South Portland. Dr. Vanessa Little is also here. She specializes in palliative care at Mount Desert Island Hospital. And Dr. Isabella Stumpf is Division Director of Palliative Medicine at Maine Medical Center and Medical Director for Palliative Care at Maine Health. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Again, tomorrow on the program, we'll look back at the news in Maine in February. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.